本主義が弱まってないんです。弱まっているわけですよ。だからですね、これ電子シュアレーメトレスパース and so that when I come in here to share it, I take it away with this. We have found that in which the whole God's world has been sinking and in works. But you must know it by just hearing about it. To be convinced, you must test it and prove it, and you can do it. Now we turn to the great book, the Bible, and you be the judge to what extent you have accepted the testimony of Jesus. We repeat here, my God, tonight, that it is very important that we hear the testimony of Jesus and respond to it. So when I make the claim here, quoting Blake, all that you behold, though it appears without, it is within, in your imagination, of which this world of mortality is but a shadow. And I mean that literally. This is not just a loving political thought, literally expressed that way. He made it literally. And so the Bible makes the statement, you read in the sixth chapter of the book of John. It is really called the chapter of secession, because in this chapter, all claims are repeated throughout the chapter. And at the very end, they seceded. And the statement of the court was this, no one can come unto me unless the Father who sent me draws him. And I will raise him up at the last day. And then we are told, he asked a very simple question, and suppose you saw the Son of Man ascending into heaven. There was no response. No one believed it. And then he said, that's why I told you that no one can come to me unless it be granted him by the Father. No one. And then he said, now the evangelist writing the story is now allegorizing. And so it is said, and Jesus knew from the first who loved as well, who did not believe, and who it was that should betray him. Knew from the first who did not believe, and who should betray him. Now we read the story carefully, and he said, he repeats it again. No one can come unto me unless the Father who sent me draws him. Then we are told that many at this point, many of the disciples turned back, never to walk with them again. Never to go with them again. All the other disciples were turned back. They couldn't go all the way. They came away, but they couldn't go all the way. Now, no man judges you, for the Father is taking place in us. We hear the testimony. We hear it on the platform, or we read it in the book, or maybe we have experience. But to what extent can we go all the way? We are told that there's a law, the law of the identical harvest. That be not deceived, God is not mocked. For as a man sows, so shall he reap. And then we are told, and the Lord said, let the earth put forth vegetation, plants bearing seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind. No variation, each according to its kind. Now I think the whole God's world will accept that in the vegetable world. And they will come into the animal world and accept it. But cows produce cows, and men and women produce, well, men and women. And so we can take that law in the natural world and see that God's world. Can we step beyond that boundary and take it out in the mineral world? Can we now actually perform a mental act? An imaginal act, and observe the working of it, and then admit when we see the fruit, that the imaginal act of the seed planted by us, and the thing that we see reflecting it, is really the offspring of the fruit of it. Can we accept it? Well, we may. I trust that everyone here will accept that. I think the majority of you will. But can we accept it? worry now. Never mind. Come to me. Who sent me? Rockwell. But I didn't know what I had to say. Can you go that far? Well, they wouldn't go that far. They would go as far as creating an external event to an internal imaginal act. But they could not believe for one moment that encountering a total stranger in the world, and that a stranger comes and plays a part in my life, that he cannot come unless my father draws him. And I and my father are one. I am the father, and the father in me. So that no one comes into my life and plays any part in my life that I am drawing him, good, bad, or indifferent. He just can't come. Well, man isn't big enough as yet to accept that widening circle. Can't divide it. So that I'm that far to encompass the whole vast world, and that everything that is happening in his individual life, he's the cause of it. He can't quite relate these events, when they are cut by living beings in the world, to anything that he inwardly has ever done. He can't do it for one moment. But I say, you be the judge. Whether you believe it or not, for example, everyone from the very first. Why did he know everyone from the very first? Well, who is he that knew all this? Are we not told? What brought him out of the man's thoughts? Except the spirit of the man which is in him. No man knows a man's thoughts except the spirit of the man which is in him. Well, who is the spirit in you? I tell you, it is Jesus Christ. I've been crucified with Christ. It is not I who is, but Christ who is in me. Read it in the second chapter, the 20th verse of Galatians. I've actually been crucified with him. And it is not I who is, but Christ who is in me. So the Spirit in me knows. He knew from the beginning that I believe it or not. So I sit here this night, do I believe it? To what extent would I believe this law of liberty? Whether not a thing is happening that I didn't cause, not a thing in my world. Well, who betrayed me now? I knew the one who would betray me. But no one can betray me unless he has my secret, but no one. You can't betray a man unless you know the man's secret. And to know the man's secret, you have to get the spirit of that man. So who could betray a man by himself? So no man can betray my life. I lay down myself. The power to lift it up and the power to lay it down again. So no man can betray my life. So he knew the one who would betray him and should betray him, because he is himself. He is self-betrayed. He knows the secret to the point where everything is happening in his world, because he is the sole cause of all the things that he encounters, that experiences, that is the one cause. He knows it. And so he betrayed the creator's spirit within himself. He knows what is the cause of it. He's found it in himself. His own fundamental human in man is the Christ spirit in him that believes the cause of the phenomenon of his life. He knows that. And so that is self-betrayed. He will show it to the world, but who will accept it? He will tell it to the world, and so they will themselves judge to what extent they will go with it. But when he comes to the statement that no man can come unto me, except the Father who certainly draws him, we draw the line there. Now let me share with you what has been given to me. The gentleman is here tonight, and this is his story, as given me last Tuesday night after the meeting. The scenes were all right individually, but for some reason or other, I just wasn't satisfied with the story. So Sunday morning, realizing that the story was the problem, and not my treatment of the story. I did this Little Meek Stevenson. And then I imagine how he must have felt after he had written a good story. Then I went back and put on my own shoes and tried to match that feeling, which I have imagined to be Stevenson's feeling, as he felt having produced a good story. That was the technique that he employed. It all this happened while I was taking my morning walk. When I came home, I began to list point by point to my wife what I thought was wrong with the story. And then, point by point, I saw someone standing behind me and counting me. And suddenly, the solution to each point came into my mind. Just as though someone was standing behind me and counting me. And the whole thing came into my mind, point by point. Now he said, I should add that while I was gone, my wife had imagined wonderful things are happening. She was not sure that your wife would understand. But when a man is at home day in and day out, a woman helps to use generalizations, sweeping generalizations, so she would understand that, because my wife and I spend 24 hours a day and 7 days a week, we're on the same place. And so he, the writer, uses his home as I use my home. So, with that confession on, he said about an hour later, I was in the shower, and I was presently recalling an experience of 6 years ago. Recalling the thing that happened 6 years ago, when a story was being, or it seemed to be, dictated to me in a like manner. The thing that just happened, as someone standing behind me and dictating the story of this past hour, and it seemed 6 years ago, as I recall the story, that this happened in a like manner. Some presence dictated, or seemed to dictate, the story. And then it hit me like a sledgehammer. For the story of 6 years ago was this central character in the story of 6 years ago was Eddie. Identical, down to a T. It was Eddie. And then, if you were here when we told the story of Eddie, let me now tell you the character that he conceived 6 years ago. He said he was mildly insane. Well, you know, Eddie was committed to an insane asylum for those who were mildly insane. He said the character was periodically picked up and released by the police. Well, the police picked up Eddie and let him go. Asylum wouldn't take him back. The police didn't want him, and so the police released him. He said, for plot reasons, I gave the character a limp in the right foot. The right leg. So had Eddie a limp in the right leg. He said, the people of the town, of the character, treated him in the way that the people in my neighborhood treat Eddie. The character lived in a tent outside the town. Eddie lives today in a tent up in the hills of Hollywood. The character wore the kind of clothes, the same clothing that Eddie wears. The character had a fascination with atomic fallout. In fact, he perpetrated a hoax upon the town and almost scared the daylights out of him and about to lynch him. Eddie has the most unusual fascination for atomic fallout and tells me he has a pipe. But when he wraps it with some other piece of metal, he can cause atmospheric disturbance on any part of the earth. And it disturbs him because he feels his misuse of this pipe, which he calls his space needle, is the cause of the unrest in parts of the world. there is perhaps signal, then where he usually keeps it under my house. And so, the song includes compass. What is it? This is the amazing similarity between these two. Not the feeling, but all the same for the character. Identical to the feeling I have for any. Now, he said, I didn't tell the story to my wife immediately. I wanted to test it. And so I began to tell her and describe to her a story of a character. And I purposely omitted the link in the right leg, because had I said it, she would easily have thought of Eddie. So I didn't mention that characterization. Then I omitted completely from my vocabulary the use of the words unwanted and rejected. Which, by the way, in describing this character, he felt himself unwanted and rejected. But in spite of these omissions, she said to me, you were talking about Eddie. And then, said he, I was stunned that my wife, on a description of a character I conceived 6 years ago, could see in that character and not see that character. But I'm talking only of one character she knows as Eddie. So I really should sign this letter worried. For the simple reason, having written all my life, I have created some characters that I am in no hurry to meet in the flesh. So, everyone's gone there. Very good, and of course, I quickly turn to your book, The Law of the Promise, and reread the chapter. There is no fiction. And now, said he, with this on my chest, as it were, I must say something good in favor of an outside God and candles. For in my present state of mind, I think that really such a thing, an outside God, would be more comforting than to be for God creating all of these things that's coming into my world. But I have, and the fact is, as a writer, I have conceived and projected on the screen characters I don't really want to meet in a hurry, not in the flesh. Then he said, I hope you'll keep this letter in a safe place. Because if I ever want cruelty or insanity, I would have it. You keep it in a safe place, and there I needed it to prove my insanity, but there is a proof. For here, this one, this gentleman, has gone all the way, and is willing now from his confession in this letter to admit that the character Eddie that simply came by accident after a great rainstorm, that all the cars were rushed to the neighborhood, and Eddie had no job for the day, and coming his way up the hill, up to where he lives in his tent, this gentleman very kindly gave him a lift, and the friendship began there. Because outside of this friendship, which he says is the same intense feeling he has for him that he had for his character, and he always had for the character, we have no social meeting point. We do not travel in the same social circle, intellectual circle, financial circle. Yet, there is a positive feeling, I'm quite sure, towards this Eddie, that he has towards maybe 9/10 of those who know in his service. And he created Eddie. So I said that everyone, you may not recognize the character. Maybe you have a writer. And have written to the point where you can remember an actual character you created out of the nowhere. And have it produced. And saw the production yourself. And knew that was a super character. But he remembered. And then he went into the flesh and blood character that he conceived 6 years before. So the sixth chapter of the book of John. No one can come unto me unless the Father who has sent me draws him. To the last day, I will lift him up. I'll raise him up at the last day. And I'll tell the gentleman exactly how he's going to raise him up. The day will come, and the last day doesn't mean the last day of 24 hours. It means the last day of the journey from the grave to the grave, and it is your last time around. and you're not on the field of defense anymore. And when that reaction finally comes to an individual, you have this experience. When you least expect it, no one ever told you about it. And maybe what I tell you now, you will get encrypted again. So when it happens, it will come as a very wonderful pleasant surprise. Because you have no memory that you heard it from my lips. But what? You don't know about it, you never read about it, no one told you about it. And one night, or they come through the day, but in my case, they always seem to come at the wee hours of the morning. And so, you will be suddenly twisted from within yourself, a portal, and through your skull you will go. And you will be clothed in the most glorious body of fire and air. It's not luminous. You need no stars, no sun, no moon to illuminate your path. And a heavenly chorus will call your name, whatever your name is. And they will pronounce the name and say, he is risen, but he is risen, but the name, say your name is John. John is risen. John is risen, they're repeating it. And then this chorus will sing out, the most glorious heavenly chorus will sing, your praise because you have been risen. And then you will come upon a sea of infinite imperfection, human imperfection. The men of the day will be there. The blind, the heart, the river, everything you've conceived, all taking human form. And they're reading through you, their Redeemer, to redeem them. And as you glide by, you seem to glide by, everyone will be transformed into the image of perfection. You do not raise a finger to make it so. Blind people become those of perfect sight, the deaf hear, the lip, the heart, the river, all cease to be what they were as you pass by. And when you come to the very end, and the last one is finished, and all are perfect, then the same heavenly chorus will exult and ring out, it is finished, the last cry of the cross. And then you, your unfinished business, will return here to complete it, to do it, maybe to leave it in a more permanent form in the form of a picture or a story, but you will tell it in a more permanent form that you yourself have none of experience. That's forever as far as you are concerned, but you will tell it for the benefit of others and scream it out as it were. Return here to complete a few remaining years, for your end is at hand. Everyone had to be raised that you were created. Everyone had to be transformed into perfection to conform to you that you were lifted up at the very moment you were perfect. And so as you walk by, you molded them in harmony with the perfection springing within you. And you do it without thought, without taking thought. You are part of the conceptual mind. You're not concerned about these people. It's going to be worth by knowing in the depth of your soul, it is all perfect. And everyone is reshaped and molded in harmony with that perfection springing within you. So you're told, if I be lifted up from the earth, I will lift all men unto me. I will show you and transform them. And so no man came, save I called him. But I called any, there was any. And then memory served me well. I was taking a shower. And suddenly I'm presently recalling a story of 6 years ago. And when I recall it, and God my son, he dawns upon me. Well, I've been walking around this past 2 years in the company of one that I myself have created and I didn't recognize him. Here is a man in my own body, and for 2 years he's been in my life, and for the end of my world, and I didn't recognize my own creation. But that's what the world does all day long. It draws only its own, and doesn't recognize its own creation. No man cometh unto me, save I call him. For my Father and I alone. So if he can come unless my Father draws him, he can come unless I draw him, for I am my Father alone. And so I am drawing every being into my room, good, bad, or intimate. So when I think he is wrong, and he crosses my path, knowing that he is no good, you can't trust him. Where in my will, can I go back to that moment of mistrust in me when I really couldn't trust myself? I couldn't. I was afraid of my own behavior if given an opportunity. If I thought I could get away with it, I might. But I may not be able to sit down and write the story. I could enact the story. I could write to a story. And if no one really had eyes upon me, I thought they didn't, I might contemplate with pleasure an act that in the court would be quite embarrassing to those who love me. I might. If in the past I ever contemplated that some rosin across my back would come right into my world, and would tell that right in my world, I may condemn for it. But in condemning him, I'm condemning myself, because he is my very self. Bearing witness to my own creations. Bearing witness, I told a story here once, many years ago. It was a very intimate story, and I told it certainly not to build any paper here, but to encourage every person in this world to forgive everything in this world, because you're the cause of the behavior of everyone you're observing in this world. And I told it in the most intimate manner because it struck home forcefully. And I was severely criticized by the audience for it, and criticized the following month by the wife of the gentleman who brought me to this farm to give a series of lectures. And she said, I thought that was very, very unbecoming. And so many have criticized you for it. They've written me letters. I can't tell you, but many of them are letters I received that are very, very critical of what you said on the platform. I said, I didn't say for any purpose other than to show everyone that they are the cause of the misbehaviors of others that they condemn. They are the cause of it. And so, I tried to explain to her that it was not condemnation of the person. I was putting myself out of the cause of harvest, the cause of our action. And this is the story. I was married and separated for 15 years. No divorce and no final separation, no legal separation, but separated. I was married at the age of 18, about 19, separated at 20. And then for the next 15 years, we lived our separate lives and only saw each other when she finally went to court for non-payment of alimony. That's the only time we ever saw each other. I always came out of the court with a reduction. Always, one after the other. So, 7 times before the judge and 7 times it went on this way. You finally she knew that without taking any more, there's nothing else to get. You get nothing the next time. And so that was the picture. So I told her, so all these things are happening. And one day I knew I wanted to get married to a certain party, who is now the mother of my daughter. But I had all this entangled personal life. And not separated legally. And you can't get divorced in New York City, except on one grounds, the most archaic law in the world. Therefore, nothing but collusion goes on in the course, the divorce course in New York City. So I was not being forced upon a man because of this archaic law. Well, I wanted my divorce. And then she was told by a very close, intimate friend of mine, I wanted a divorce and to really leave town, get out of town. But my friend didn't want me to get a divorce and marry the girl that I eventually married. So I thought, all right, I will now apply this law and I expect as though I were happily married to the girl who now bears my name. And at the end of a week, my dancing partner, I thought, was the one who had been told to fly, and she was. She came to me and told me that she had given me some trouble. Just a problem. She could never marry me because it was not that feeling towards me, but that made me very happy. And then the other one was gone now, never to be funded again, so the world of things. So I still said it in the assumption that I was happily married. And one morning the phone rang. As I answer the phone, it's the courtroom calling. This is the federal building. I said, yes. Are you Neville, daughter? Yes. Are you the public speaking post by the name of Neville? I said, yes. Well, now you've got to be in your next catches them running again. Now, I was too sleepy to ask why. And so, next Tuesday morning, just a little before 10, here, the phone rings again. Are you not with Adam? I said, yes. And why aren't you in court? Didn't we call you last Tuesday pretending to be in court today? I said, why should I be in court? What's wrong that I should be in court? I have been subpoenaed. And he said, this party of the law. You're a father, Captain. Every father's a brother's in court, and I'm about to get his bit of stomach into the papers. And the papers to play. Well, I said, well, what's wrong? They said, well, your wife happens to be on trial. And so if you would come on down, I maybe you could throw some light upon this. So I went on down. Now into the courtroom just in time to see them bring up into the trial as well. The three judges came in, took their position, and then someone whispered to one judge, and then the voice said, is Mr. Garland in the courtroom? I said, I'm here. Would you take the stand? You're not swearing. Not at all. But maybe you could help us to throw a little light here. And so I took the stand. And they asked me if you were the same religious faith. I said, no, she was born a Catholic, I was born a Protestant. But that's no problem. She is not a practicing Catholic, and I'm not a practicing Protestant. So it's not that problem at all. And then he said, well, then, could you throw some light? I said, first of all, she's 8 years my senior. And you know my age, that we must know her age. She's undoubtedly passing through some emotional disturbance. And so when a woman is passing through some stress, well, they can do any irrational thing. Well, she's not shy, but I am quite sure she's never done it before. Even if you have the evidence to support it, I still say she's never done it before. I will swear she'll never do it again. I ask you for my son's sake. He said, I've never heard of a plea in this court of mine similar to that in all my years on the bench from a man who has never been taken by this merciful plea of his. When he really wanted to divorce, because we have all the problems before us, taken from your wife when she was in jail for this past week, waiting for this death trial. He said, I'll act upon your recommendation, Mr. Garland. I have offended you for 6 months. I'm suspended. Don't you ever come before me again. Mary met me in the lobby. He said, that was a very decent thing of you to do, devil. Give me the papers. I said, I don't have any papers with me. Come home, I don't do. We wrote it together. First time in these many, many years, we have appealed to them between the judge and the bench. We wrote together to my hotel, and I came on the papers. I had not been able to serve for a number of months. Here were the papers. And we got my divorce uncontested. So I told that story to say that I called her to do what she did. And I had assumed that I was free to marry the girl that now bears my name. She would never have done these things at all. And so she goes into the store, and the first coming by, she picked something that she hadn't paid for. And someone saw it. And so it was a silly thing. But nevertheless, she did it. And that is what brought her into the city, the private finder. And she was moved to ask me to give her the papers because I agreed with her. And so having done all this, who actually was the culprit? I was the culprit. She came right into my world to pray a certain God, to grant me my freedom. I'm speaking of the law of liberty. And so, should he be condemned to an act whereby the unseen author of the law? I didn't write it out. I said, I'm writing it by the law. But I determined the behavior of that body, that he had to do something in order to not have to take the papers from me. And so I tell everybody to show that don't condemn anyone. You and you alone are the author of the things happening in your life. And therefore, would you condemn a man, this gentleman, right into his crib, a limp in the right leg. And here comes a man with a limp in the right leg. You write everything into an imaginary character, and he isn't imaginary at all. You can't distinguish between what the world holds, the imaginary, and the reality. You can't. This is all wrong. And so people will not go beyond a certain limit. And so you could say, well, I will assume that I am what I want to be, and things happen in my world like this. the trial for his man. He said, would you go out to me? And Peter answered, to whom will we go? You have the words of eternal life, and we believe and have come to know that you are the holy one of God. But to whom is Peter speaking? He isn't speaking to another. Whoever is the character written in this trial as Peter came to that decision within himself. It's the most difficult thing in the world to accept, for this is the cause of secession. They're seceding of their government because they will not accept the fact that they are actually the cause of these things that are living and moving in their world. Some people, some ministry, some name, and they are the cause of it. They will not accept it, you know, right? They want him never to work with him again. And then Peter said, to whom will we go? You have the words of eternal life. These are true. And now to whom will I turn? For you know we have believed. And we have come to know you are the Holy One of God. No doubt, but turn back now to Matthew, and you see the answer. Who do people say that I am? Some say John the Baptist. Some say Elijah coming in. Some say Jeremiah. And some say prophet of old. Doesn't respond to that. He asks another question. But whom do you say that I am? And Peter becomes a spokesman. And Peter answers, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. He said, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not told you this, but my Father who is in heaven has revealed it to you. Oh, who is the Father? He said, I am the Father. And you see the Father. So who but the Spirit in man is revealing? What Christ really is, no God can come again, no reincarnation. But man has Christ with him, and he's awakening it. More than more and more. So the gentleman wrote the story concerning Cain, and it all happened until now. I really wanted to wake up, and then try to wake up. But now, I'm finding that I need to go to sleep again. He doesn't want what he's just discovered. This enormous responsibility to be responsible for the character that he has created. And to all work in the earth, one after the other, to enter his circle and become intimate, and one that he really is very fond of. One that he created, and endowed him with all these strange things, a peculiar mental unbalance, and a limp in his right leg. And unwanted by society, and looked down by the neighborhood, putting him in the dignity, and ostracizing from society, and looking unwanted and unwashed, and, well, recovered in many ways. And all these things he does to a character, and falls in love with the character. So you can see the words, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. They're paying all these parts because they're imaginative of men and women are writing dramas. And the world is forever falling under the spell of imaginative men and women. No matter what the world will tell you, the world is falling under the spell of those who are living or writing intensely with emotion. So today, you try it. I hope, but the judgment is yours, don't tell me, but I hope you can go all the way. And don't tell anyone you can go all the way because the Spirit in you, he knows. Well, you can really go all the way, or you turn back tonight and take only a portion of it. Or even a little portion of it, take it. So there's the law of the identical office. When the man sows, so shall he reap. Regardless of what the philosophy reads, you're given. And you'll find in the end, everything is simply bearing witness to man, what man is doing. As breaks are linked to the heath and the vile. The thorns of the thistles of the waste. And they told me how they would be tired and driven out and compelled to chase. And you would not believe for one moment the greatest telling us that the unwholesome suppressions of the normal natural urges of the animal bodies that we wear are the cause of the thorns and the thistles of the waste. that society is clamped down upon all the normal, natural urges of the human animal body, that these are animal bodies that we wear. And by putting a cap upon the natural urges, then comes thorns and thistles of the waste. And what Baptist would believe that? He doesn't believe that for 1 second. And he thinks he's going to kill them by some insecticide or some other kind of thing. And go out and burn the wind. They'll all come back. As long as man walks the earth who can impose these restrictions on growing healthy bodies, and we call them moral laws. There's nothing of this world but man. Because God is the only reality, and God is man. And man is God. So man is all of creation, and God is man, and exists in us, and we in him. The eternal body of man is the imagination, and that is God himself. So I tell you, whether it be a writer, as this young man writes, and undoubtedly writer of power of God, to earn the kind of mighty earns from his own confession. And so he writes it, and luckily he was spotted. But he was given 2 years before he realized he was his own creation. But now what he did to rectify this problem of the story, you can do it. Leonardo, he took a great imaginative writer, anyone who could write Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You certainly have an idea in that when you take Robert Louis Stevenson. And he can put his feet into the feet and the shoes of such an imaginative writer. And then, right behind him, someone, it was Stevenson, he called him by a mood. You can tell by the mood that you wear, if we would mean, in this world. You wear moods, and they come. And he called the mood. He wondered, what would the mood be like? What would it be like? And who? Asking who? He's asking, what would Stevenson be like? How did he feel after he finished what he considered a good script, a good story? And having caught that mood, he said, I'm back in my own shoes. And then I tried to match my own feeling to what I had imagined Stevenson must have felt. And so that he must have made it. And then to agree not touching anything in this world, it shall be established for them in this world. If you two agree, when you call the one with whom you wanted to agree, he moves. And then, as though someone stood behind it and dictated the solution of every project that he brought upon it, it all came into his mind. You can now probably do it to this man or writer to sit down and back it up. After the all solved in his mind. Then, taking the show, I'm feeling very happy about what has just happened. He presently recalls an experience 6 years ago, and while he's contemplating it, it's like a sledgehammer on his head. Who would have thought he'd been walking around with his own creation for 2 years and didn't recognize him? And he didn't want to spill it on his wife, he thought, I'll test this first before I spill it on him. And so he described the character. Leaving out very important things like the link in the right leg and the use of the two words unwanted, rejected, and leaving out things in the deeper which he still could spot the character was Eddie. And so that story you can take out tonight. What would it be like if you want money? Well, maybe mention someone who has noodles of it. What would it be like to him? If he really wants money, because many have it without any fine money. But if someone really wants it, what would it be like after he really let go of the feeling? And if you try to match your feeling to that which you imagine he must have felt when he made what he considered the beginning. That's the feeling. And then there's matching and see what happens. Just try it. What we're doing here is experiment, because this is the greatest problem in the world. As Foster said, the secret of imagining is the greatest of all problems, to the solution of which everyone should aspire. First of all, infinite power is there if you unravel it, infinite wisdom, and infinite delight. So if it contains all of these, as we can unravel the problem, then why not try it? So we're asking everyone to try and then share with us, and I in turn will share, as I did this time, with the general setup. need, I hope it keeps it up. And share it with me, that I in turn may share with you these properly loving facets of this green diamond. For if you can put his imaginary feet into imaginary shoes and feel what the great Stevenson must have felt when he was satisfied with the story, and then take the shoes off, put on his own shoes, all of imagination, for he is taking his mind off when all this is going through his mind. And people walking by, we see a man walking by, and possibly ignoring what he never had second thought, or there might have been a in his mind, but no one but the spirit of the man would know. Who would know the one moment that Stevenson was walking by? But he was wearing the shoes of Stevenson, Stevenson was there. To the point that when you saw him, you would not see the man that was there in his wife would see. You would see Stevenson. You mean you would? Because all things by love and mind in one another's being mingled. And so we are outside in space, outside in time. You're only as far away as you're welcome to be. And you're always controlled. Any being in this world. You can call anyone that's been gone for another centuries. Call him by the feeling that you heat. Put yourself into his shoes and call him. And then, if you have a problem as he had a problem, you have the same sensation someone is standing behind you and prompting you. So a prompt by prompt of the solution is given to you, which prompts right into the head. If you believe that prayer, who died in 1827, could really solve a certain problem for you, feel the presence of prayer. Because they're not pushed out as the world would think. Say, in time, back to 1827, he certainly is not in any little grave in England. No one is there. And so they were only as far away as you let them be. So he went back and read the chapter on There Is No Fiction, and discovered he, the writer, and very curiously when he said in his letter, having written all my life, I have created such characters, I have showed that I am in no hurry to meet them in the flesh. But it doesn't matter. The day will come, you move up by a spiral motion when you least expect it. And without effort, walk by and redeem every one of them. Every one of them given to the body grave here because they were created either willingly or unwittingly. And so, I ask you to join with me. Go to the test and don't delay with your brothers. Bring them to me. This is as many as you possibly can. That I may encourage others to try it too. Because this, when you go only in this chapter, the sixth chapter of the book of John, it really is the secession chapter. They all departed, never to walk with him again. And only the few remained. And he turned and they said, "Well, we go. You have the words of eternal life. And we have believed you. And we have come to know." It didn't come overnight. We have come to know you are the Holy One of God. For the Holy One of God is God Himself. You come to know it. But you are pointing to a man. You found a creative presence in yourself. And although the world will try to make you feel that a creative presence is a power. Speak out of God's nature. No one personalizes. Oh, yes, you did. It's yourself you found. Not your person. So Christ is in you as the creative power in you. You are doing it, and you are a person, therefore Christ is a person. So is your Christ a person? You always talk about Christ as the creative power. He is not only a person, he's the only person. He is the heavenly man. You're finding in yourself the heavenly man, the man that cannot die, the immortal you. And when you find him, don't let him go. Let everything else go, but don't let him go. So then, Paul writes to Timothy. He said, "I know whom I have believed, not what of. Whom?" And he's speaking now of Christ, and yet he defines Christ as the power and the wisdom of God. Having defined it as the power and wisdom, he personifies it, personifies it, because of himself, as we found. He found it in himself. You'll never find him on the other side. And so, to what extent do tonight you can go with the testimony of Christ Jesus? Can you go all up and say that no man, no one, male or female, can come unto me and let my Father who sent me draw it. And I'll raise him up at the last day. Leave that section alone. That's going to happen anyway. But to what extent can you accept that testimony? That no one can come unto me unless my Father who sent me draws it. And I and my Father are one because I am in my Father and my Father is in me. Can I go that far? And then go all out that not one bee in this world can cross my path. That I did not call. And those who come more intimately to my soul, they really are things I've been dwelling upon. You start dwelling upon the so-called tiredness of the world and talking to my Father. You find yourself to be living in Russia. He lives right next door. Comes right in. And then you want to get with him. You've been creating in your mind a certain something, and he comes right into your world. You draw them as you draw them out of the panel. Now, let's go into the silence. Everything in Scripture from beginning to end is all about you. Not the garment that you're wearing, but you, the wearer of that garment. Everything from beginning to end is your real autobiography. Much of it you have not yet experienced, but it still is yours to be experienced, therefore truly an autobiography. At the moment you may read it as a biography. Don't think it is of a man. It's all about you. The most insane revelation will prove itself true one day and you experience it. It's all about you. When the child was brought forth and it was quickly caught up into heaven, you have that experience. The child will vanish from those who would try to destroy it. And even all the destructive powers of the world are still begotten by you. All in a state of dream, when man was sound asleep. So you are that being. I hope tonight you saw who Judas was. But some being who betrayed what the whole vast Christian world believes to be their Lord. No one could have betrayed a man unless he knew that man's secret. And no person knows a man's secret but the spirit of that man is in him. So who is Judas? And the word Judas means the praise of Jehovah. Judas is praise. When man thinks the drama took place 2,000 years ago, it's taking place. All hell said, no man takes my life. I lay down myself. If no man takes my life, then what are you paving a man for? I laid it down in every drama that moves upon the face of the earth. Unless I die, thou canst not live. But if I die, I shall rise again, and thou with me. And so he became man, that man would become God. And he did it voluntarily. You can imagine, well, that's Christ. That's the power of God. And it is personified, though a power, because you're a person, therefore it is a person. Every evil act of the world needs a man as an agent, therefore it is a man. Every noble act needs a man as an agent, therefore it is man. So it's all personified. So the scripture personifies the powers. Yeah, that's right. They are powers. So they are personified. Yes, sir. We're coming to that in the not distant future, right from this platform, but we'll answer. Some claim that man is constantly robbed by looking back or looking forward. He is so concerned about what he did and what he is going to do, what he formerly encountered and what he hopes to encounter, and he'll miss the everlasting problem, which is I am. So Christ defines himself as I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. Sometime in the future, and it's ever present. He only is in the present. So man is robbed by two thieves that he walks with all day long because Christ is crucified there. So my belief to my brother, my belief to my wife, I'm now listening to the vast opportunity of omitting the only reality of the world, which is the present. And only when I am, I will reach his heaven. Only when I am I pulling up. So don't wait to assume that I am what I would be, because reason denies it. Ignore reason, ignore the facts of life, and dare to assume it, because all things are possible to I am. So the two things are with us in morning, noon, and night. I've been wondering, or wondering if I did the right thing at that cocktail party last night. And I said the right thing, and I made the right impression, and I've been worrying all through the night, deeply being given, that's a thief. And now, I'm invited to one tomorrow. I wonder if my tongue will be tied, or do I have a nice dress, or I have time to go to the hairdresser. All these things I'm concerned about tomorrow. But it's only today. This now. This is I am. Well, I see my time is up. So do draw it. I'm sure with us by giving us in the written form your results. Thank you.